Hey there. In 2018, my local chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention in Western New York sent me to a soul shop for church leaders training in Buffalo. The goal of the training was to help communities, churches, and individuals impacted by suicide. Since 2018, I have attended two other Soul Shop for Leaders workshops. This spring, I've been invited to become a trainer for Soul Shop. With the help of HSP listeners, I'll be attending this training in Little Rock, Arkansas at the end of April. With the help of this training, I'll be able to offer workshops for church leaders and youth workers to support efforts of suicide prevention and to help churches and individuals impacted by suicide. To contribute to the expenses of this training, go to www.buymeacoffee.com/Tara L. Eastman. For more information on the Soul Shop Movement, go to www.soulshopmovement.org. Thank you for your help in this important work in the church and the world. And if you contribute, please make a note that this is for Soul Shop training. Thank you for being a partner in faith-based suicide prevention to equip faith community leaders and congregations to minister to those impacted by suicide. Welcome to Holy Shenanigans. I'm your muse, Tara Lamont Eastman, a poet, a pastor, and a podcaster. In episode 109, Does Gratitude Matter? We hear from researcher and author Eileen Campbell Reed. Campbell Reed discovered in the pandemic how resilience, grace, and gratitude lead to lasting change and wholeness. Do you agree that a season of grief and loss can lead to resilience? Does the practice of gratitude really matter? Stay with us as Eileen answers 3.5 questions about love, grief, and the power of gratitude. In times of grief and loss, and even in joy, does the act of expressing gratitude make a difference in our world? Does it make a difference to our individual state of peace and well-being? When I think back to March of 2020, it feels like a long ago season of decades gone by, as well as a continuing experience of constant change, pivot, grow, struggle, consider, pivot, and change. That experience has continued in my life as a pastor through and continuing in this season of a global pandemic. But even as I say those words, continuing in a global pandemic, there is a sense of heaviness and a lot of pushback on why are you still talking about this? In my experience, there's a great deal of it's time to get back to normal, whatever this is, or statements of despair and worry. Why can't we just go back to the way things were? As I encourage people to take steps to move forward, to consider new ways of being Jesus followers in the world, I've met some challenges. But when I face these challenges, I look back to the writing of researcher, writer, and speaker, Brené Brown. In her work, she has often called me back to living a life of wholeheartedness. And living in this way does not mean you do it perfectly. But it means that you're in the ring, you're in the arena, trying, working, learning, being vulnerable. But when people step into the arena to try, to take steps for change or to live in new wholehearted ways, they're often met with critique. Critique of those who are in the act of working things out in the challenging arena of life. And to those that give critique, this is Brené Brown's advice. A lot of cheap seats in the arena are filled with people who never venture onto the floor. They just hurl mean-spirited criticism and put-downs from a safe distance. The problem is, when we stop caring what people think and stop feeling hurt by cruelty, we lose our ability to connect. But when we're defined by what people think, we lose the courage to be vulnerable. Therefore, we need to be selective about the feedback we let into our lives. For me, if you're not in the arena also getting your ass kicked, I'm not interested in your feedback. To recap, Brown teaches, if a person wants to give feedback on the work at hand, that person also needs to be in the ring, helping with the efforts. Like it or not, the world was and is changed by the global experience of the COVID-19 pandemic. For all of the world, all industries, and yes, even the church, and what it means to be a pastor, there has been significant change in practice, approach, efforts, and the needs of people. The last 2.5 years has not just been about challenges, but also some gifts. It's given me the gift to look at how and why the church does things. How do we communicate faith and hope and love? How do we look at these things in effective ways with a more critical lens? On its best day, the season gave me space to be creative in how I went about the work of caring for the spiritual needs of a faith community. Because the status quo was not the way that we could work. We needed to be open. We needed to be curious. We needed to practice gratitude for the relationships and the resources we had to express our love of God and others in new and more effective ways. On the best days and in the best ways, the church lives into this time with gratitude and vulnerability and playfully asks, how can we love and care for people's needs most effectively? And then we enter that ring and that arena with gusto. On the worst days, though, we point fingers, we critique, we stay out of the arena, or even turn our backs to the needs we see and look backwards at what was with a nostalgic longing. I don't believe, as Jesus followers, that we're called to look backwards, but we're called to take brave steps with the tools of creativity, compassion, and gratitude, and enter the arena to do the work of grace and love with our whole hearts. So it's with this wholehearted lens that I look at this week's healing story from Luke 17. It's the account of 10 men living with a skin condition called leprosy, a condition that isolated them from being in community with others. The 10 men come to Jesus and ask to be healed. And Jesus directs them to show themselves to the priests. In this showing, all of the men are healed from their illness. Every man was physically restored. In response to all this healing, only one of the men, a man from Samaria, comes to give gratitude to Christ for his healing. The other 9 men understood to be of the tribe of Israel, of Jesus' tribe, go on their way, healed, but not returning to express gratitude. In this story, if we looked at the healed men with a critical eye, we might assume that the men of the same tribe would be more apt to express their gratitude. We might expect that the man from another tribe, a tribe that historically was estranged from the Israelite community, to walk away without a word. But in the case of this story, the man who wholeheartedly expressed gratitude was the Samaritan man. And so Jesus blesses the Samaritan man. Your faith has made you well. But Jesus also poses a question as why did the other 9 men not return to give thanks to God for their healing? As I think about Jesus' question, I wonder if the 9 men simply just went back to their lives expecting they could just pick up where they left off. That the status quo, minus the practice of gratitude, would be enough. That the external healing was enough to get by, to go back to business as usual. But no, I don't think this is an expression of holistic healing. Status quo, surface-only healing is not going to do the trick. After a season of loss, grief, illness like leprosy, or in the experience of a global pandemic, going back to the status quo to a surface level of healing is not going to cut it. Yes, dear hearts, the world has changed, and we are in a season that requires all of us to live into wholehearted healing and living. This term, wholehearted living, is something I've been learning about from Brené Brown's work for over 10 years. And wholehearted living is a gift that is especially needed today. Brown says, to love someone fiercely, to believe in something with your whole heart, to celebrate a fleeting moment in time, to fully engage in a life that doesn't come with guarantees, these are the risks that involve vulnerability and often pain. But I am learning that recognizing and leaning into discomfort of vulnerability teaches us how to live with joy, gratitude, and grace. Wholeheartedness leads to a life of joy, gratitude, and grace. So in the light of this lesson of the 10 man healed and my pondering on how a global pandemic has changed how we all live, and how the church lives out being called as the church, I share a conversation with researcher and author Eileen Campbell Reed. Beginning in 2020, Campbell Reed conducted a 22-month qualitative study of over 100 Christian pastors and lay leaders, and found church leaders experienced profound grief, loss, and conflict. In her work, she discovered how resilience, grace, and gratitude lead people and organizations to lasting change and wholeness. And so, in 3.5 questions about love, is Eileen Campbell Reed to teach us more about wholehearted living. Hi there, friends of Holy Shenanigans Podcast. This is Tara Lamont Eastman, and I am here with special guest Eileen Campbell Reed, visiting associate professor of pastoral theology at Union Theological Seminary in New York, as well as founder and host of 3-Minute Ministry Mentor. Eileen, I am so thankful that you are here with us today, and we get to ask you some important questions about love.
Wonderful. I look forward to it. I'm delighted to be here, Pastor Tara.
So my first question is pretty straightforward. What do you love about being you?
I love that I get to do a lot of different things. When people start to introduce me, they say, like, which things should we talk about? Which things do you want us to introduce you by? Well, I am at a stage of my life and my work in which I get to do a lot of different things. And each one of them gives me gifts that bless my life and my well-being. They each have their own demands and their own, you know, charisms, right? The gifts that enrich who I am. And I also love who I am because of, you know, who I chose to marry and the child that we have and the family that we're trying to make, which is always work. And, you know, here's a thing that tells you about me, that when I left congregational ministry quite some time ago, right at the turn of the 1999 to 2020, right in that everybody was worried about Y2K. And my church got into conflict. I became a casualty of that conflict. And my friends worried, what will you do without that role? Eileen, will you know what to do with yourself? We identify you with that role as an associate pastor in a congregation. And what I discovered right away was that what I had been called to certainly was ministry. There's no doubt about that. I delight in being an ordained minister in all I do. But really, the deeper call was to live in a particular way and to be with people in a particular kind of way. And that was being with people so that they could drop down their anxieties and their worries and just tell me about who they are. And I could tell them about who I am. And being with people in that particular way, it's about stories, but it's about relationships. That's what drew me into doing the work of ministry. That was the place I could figure out to do it, was in the practice of ministry as an ordained person. But really, even when that role of local church minister was gone, it was my deeper sense of call that buoyed me, which was that I love being with people in particular kinds of ways. And I want the world to be a place where we can all be with each other in those ways. So that's the deeper love in what I do and who I am.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. I think that that really speaks to my hope a little bit of our conversation today, as we talk about the challenges of change in response to what we've learned from living through and into a global pandemic and continue to be, and how just in general terms, it's about journey for each person. And a lot of times there can be these goals that people have, or even, you know, our callings, where folks feel like, oh, I have arrived, but then you arrive and you discover we're not quite there yet. Or the journey continues, right? Or there's a depth of learning or a depth of understanding of calling that you go, oh, this was just part of the direction that got me a little bit closer. But there's so much more to learn and to live into, you know?
Yeah.
Which brings me to our next question. It's a question about love and experiencing love in a way that made a big impact on your life or had great meaning in your life. And so I wondered, could you tell us a story of how love showed up for you?
Took a lot to get our daughter here.
Yeah.
My husband, Lynn, and I were married for 17 years before we got Marissa here. Now, we weren't trying to have a baby that whole time. The first 10, 12, maybe more years, we were pretty sure. We didn't want to bring any more children into this world. Mm-hmm. We loved each other. We loved children, worked with children in the churches where we were members, always had roles in the lives of our nieces and nephews. But we were really reluctant to commit to having children ourselves for lots of reasons. And then, of course, when we decided, hey, maybe it was time we should try, you know, it wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. A story that a lot of people run into.
Right.
We weren't old by any means, but we were getting there. And so it took several more years to get Marissa into the world with us. Mm-hmm. I was looking out the window of the hospital waiting on Marissa to arrive, and rain had set in, just the light misting rain. And there were some hummingbirds outside the window going after the mimosa tree.
Yeah.
I thought later, it was like this little hummingbird arrived in our lives. Mm. And here she was. She was very tiny when she was born. She just weighed 5 pounds. And the most miraculous part of that story for me, I mean, all of it, having a daughter and all the rest, she loved us unconditionally. Mm. We were just her people. She didn't know anything else but to love us. Mm. Our need and her desire, her love, her longing, all be about her parents. Just what a gift that love was to both of us.
A love that took a lot of cultivating and time to arrive, but then when arrived was just be bopping around like that hummingbird outside the window.
That's right. And keeping up with, there's a little like keeping up with the hummingbird. And Marissa is now 16 and she's learning to drive and thinking about colleges, and she's a senior in high school. So it's just enriched and filled our lives to have Marissa in ways we couldn't have envisioned or imagined. What a gift of love she's been.
Thank you. So my third question for you today is, what do you love, Eileen, to do in the world?
I do love a lot of things. I love teaching. I do enjoy preaching. I love writing, or as one of my professors taught me to say, having written. So I've written several books, most recently, The Pandemic Pastoring Report. But behind the books I've written is something else that I dearly, dearly love. My first job after graduating and defending my dissertation, earning my PhD from Vanderbilt, was a research job. Mm. I went to work for the Pastoral Imagination Project. It's a longitudinal study of ministry as far as we know, really the only one that's going since 2009. We've been following a cohort of pastors and ministers from the time they graduated from seminary until whatever they're doing now. Yeah. And every few years, we regather them in small groups and interview them. It's an absolutely amazing job to sit for a full day with wonderful breaks and delicious food and listen to people tell you about their lives and their work. Mm-hmm. You know something about this, right? Because you interview people and you get to hear amazing stories from them. I got to do a full day of that every time we have an interview day with a group of pastors, ministers. Sometimes they've taken other turns in their careers, but the majority of them are still in ministry or at least volunteering or perhaps retired. But most of them are congregational pastors, chaplains in ministry in various ways. They've had many transitions and they tell us about how they learn, what they've learned to do, where their struggles have been. And it is just a profound gift to have people entrust you with their stories of life and ministry. Starting in June of 2020, I said to my research partners, Chris and others we work with, this pandemic is not going away. We need to be asking specific questions about how people are doing during this time. And so we launched a survey out to our cohort of 50. And then because I work with some other groups and I'm a consultant and mentor to other groups of ministers, I launched it with another small group in the Helping Pastors Thrive cohort. And then I was recruited by Austin Presbyterian Seminary later, early 21, to do some survey and interview work with more ministers and lay leaders. And as I began to formulate what that project would look like, I said, can I fold this into what we're learning from the LPI project and use the same survey? And so we did. We launched the same survey with just some minor differences to their alums and some lay leaders. Altogether, in the last little over 2 years, I have interviewed and surveyed 108 ministers and lay leaders.
Wow.
And it has been powerful to hear their firsthand experiences of what it has been to live through these pandemic times or the multiple pandemics as we talk about them. Because there was COVID-19 and then on the heels of that, those revelations about other chronic pandemics of race and healthcare disparities and economic inequalities that we've been living in for a long time.
Right.
But as we sat still in that moment of the pandemic, COVID-19 pandemic, we began to see more vividly what we were living in culturally, socially, and the church was also caught up in all these same pandemics. So on September 1st, just a couple of weeks ago, I released a report that summarizes the findings of those surveys and interviews. And it's powerful stuff to really condense and bring into one place what people have lived through, how they're coping, how they're both resilient and really still struggling and in grief. And what it is, it means about the times we're living in. It's been really amazing to share that work. I want to just say two things about what I think is important out of it, if that's okay.
Yes.
One is to say, I'm making an argument and I'm going to stick by it, that we're living in a new era of ministry. The times have changed. The context has changed. Our world has changed. Mm-hmm. And what it means to be a minister, whether you're a chaplain in a healthcare setting or the military or a university, or if you're a staff minister, a pastor, a priest, if you're a lay leader in a congregation, any of those roles, if you're an activist trying to make difference through your actions in the street, the world is different and the way we do ministry is now different.
Yes.
Part of that is the hybrid reality.
Mm-hmm.
We now have a whole new platform for how we do ministry. Even if your particular place says, no, we're going to stick with 100% in person, the world has changed and you're influenced and impacted by that reality. That's not the only thing. We're in a mode of crisis now that probably is not going to slow down. It's just going to accelerate.
Correct.
And the COVID-19 pandemic had a way of amplifying all the other crises that we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
So those realities have shifted what it is to do and respond as a minister, a pastor, a religious leader in the world today. So that's the first thing I want to say. And the second is, I think that we need a lot of things to respond to that. Rituals for grief. We need new ways of thinking about how to live in this digital world in more meaningful ways. We need many things, but at the heart of all of them is we need ministry that understands itself, that we understand as a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
Ministry must be a spiritual way of living our career, our vocation, our life, our work. If we lose sight of that or try to practice ministry simply as a professional, we're just going to be lost, and it's not what people need us to do or how to lead. This is also helpful for breaking down the barriers between who's paid for ministry and who's a volunteer. Because when we all understand that what we're doing is ministry as a spiritual practice, we recognize how we're doing shared work, collaborative work.
Yeah.
And so those two big things. We're in a new era. We need ministry as a spiritual practice to respond to this new era. Those are the things I want people to take away if they get nothing else out of the research I've been doing.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hi, this is Tara for Holy Shenanigans Podcast. I hope this space is an opportunity for you to pause, have a nice cup of coffee, and relax. If you would like to support the work of this podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Tara L. Eastman. Right. And that was my hope in our conversation, that you would emphasize those things. Because in my role as pastor, pre-pandemic, I went through a season of helping two churches consolidate into one entity. Mm-hmm. And right around the time that we were working through building stuff and choosing, deciding, just fraught with grief. And it came into the season of Lent, when all of this culmination of things happened. Everywhere I went, I was like, man, there's grief, there's grief, there's grief. And so, you know, how churches oftentimes in Lent will get together and have the Wednesday night gathering and a meal and all of this.
Yeah.
And we focused on a book about grief that was really helpful, that I often refer to folks when they have a loss or a trauma in their lives. And I had people calling me up in the community saying, well, you have an evening one, but can we do a daytime one? Like, I was doing grief work the majority of that season in my life. And then I shifted to a new call and a pandemic happens.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole nother wave of ongoing grief. And now, I mean, in my role to, you know, to bring it forward to this time, that new reality, the tension around that the world has changed, that ministry has changed, that those spiritual practices and even those things that I did share during the pandemic, the podcast being one of them, but, you know, just going live and sharing a Compline prayer in the evening, or sharing a song, or sharing a poem, or sharing scripture with folks, those practices were what kept myself grounded throughout that season of loss and isolation of the initial wave of the pandemic. But I remember speaking with a colleague and saying, these practices must be a part, or the central glue that holds us together as we live into what's coming next. It Yes. has to be. These practices were so life-giving and reorienting for myself. Yeah. That I'm like, ooh, I think that there's something in this that I think everybody yeah. needs, no matter their perspective or their religious setting.
The pastors we asked in the study about yeah. what did you do to take care of your spiritual well-being, your self-care, how did you sustain yourself? Prayer and spiritual practices were at the top of the list for most of the pastoral leaders. They were lower or not present on the lay leader list. There's some learning that can happen there. Let me say this, though. The lay leaders had a whole big, huge list of wonderful things they do to take care of their lives. And the pastor's list was much shorter. Pastors also have something to learn from lay leaders about the richness of the number of things in life that can nurture our well-being. So there's mutual learning to happen. That was one of the lovely discoveries from this study, was what mutual learning could happen about those things, mm-hmm. the variety of things, including spiritual practices that can nurture and nourish us all the time, especially when we're in a period of extended crisis. And I'm really pushing for something beyond pastors who do spiritual practices. I'm really saying ministry itself is a spiritual practice. And how we learn to do it over time is a complex learning process and deserves our sustained attention. It includes those spiritual practices of prayer and meditation and walking and reading Compline and all the rest. But it's more than just the sum of those parts.
Definitely.
It's the work itself as a spiritual practice, which for many people, it's like a little paradigm shift to think about that. And so I'm hopeful that we can continue to keep this conversation, like you and I are having, going in broad ways in the days ahead.
There's a Benedictine statement that says, everything is prayer. On my mirror, actually, that I see every morning when I'm getting ready, it has, prayer is, and I have jotted down the most random things that define what those things are. But I might even encourage folks to think about that, you know, jot it down on a piece of paper and write prayer is. I mean, I have going for a run or calling a supportive friend or, you know, praying, but also, you know, sitting down and writing something or drawing something or making a pot of soup from scratch.
My very favorite prayer in the world is silence. I just need to be in it every day. And I have long stories about that, but I will just say, when you were listing the things, I thought, yes, prayer is also just, you know, put my hand here at my heart and just be like, just be still for a minute, for a long minute. That kind of prayer of just like being present to oneself instead of running to the next thing. So important in this time.
And it's one thing that preaching direct past me as a person. Just pause.
You know, a lot of the lay people talked about how that period of time allowed them to really slow down their lives and have a sense of reevaluating and reassessing how the busyness wasn't serving them well.
Right.
Pastors had a different experience. They didn't have the slowdown. They had more work. They struggled to maintain Sabbath because the church had to shift to a whole new level of doing work that was new and had to be learned and all the technological stuff. Or if you didn't switch to that, you're constantly navigating other decisions. And the combination of that caused pastors to be busier and more exhausted during this time. So it's that both end, the lay leaders really got in touch with the stillness, the quiet, the letting go, the reevaluation. Pastors are now trying to recover spiritual practice and trying to maintain Sabbath. And again, what can we really help each other learn in this time? I think it's valuable to have conversations about that.
I totally agree, 100%. For folks that want to learn more about 3-Minute Ministry Mentor or the work that you do as a professor of pastoral theology and care, where can we find you on the internet?
Easy, my website, which is my name, eileencampbellreed.org. You can also find us at pandemicpastoring.org. You can get right to where you can download the report, watch a webinar about when we presented it the first time, and see the links to news and podcasts like this. And you can also type in 3-Minute Ministry Mentor and you'll find us right away.
So my half question is that if you could extend a word of affirmation or wisdom or love to the folks that are listening to our conversation today, what would you extend to them?
At 3-Minute Ministry Mentor, we've been working with something called the Pandemic Permission Project, which is a lot of people in the pandemic needed some permission to just do some simple, small little things like permission to laugh, permission to read, permission to go outside. And we created a bunch of cards trying to help people think about like giving themselves permission to do the little things, because many of us are called to big things in life. But we can't do those if we're not doing the small things to care for our well-being and be present to ourselves. So I want to give people permission to do whatever that little thing is that you need to do for your well-being. Take a nap, sit with your kids, take a walk, whatever the small things are, so that you have the renewed energy to do the big things that God is calling you to do in the world. And we need you to do those things.
Yeah.
But you need to do the small things first so that you have the energy and the capacity to do the big things you're called to do.
That is a very important permission slip to give, as well as to receive. And so today, as we round the corner of our wonderful conversation, I would like to extend you a blessing from my Celtic Daily Prayer Book. And it is titled, For a Journey. Let me not undertake this journey begrudgingly, but instead with love and thankfulness, saying, I thank you for this, my God. I am a traveler and a stranger in the world, like so many of your people before me.
Thank you. I love to receive that blessing. I do like to think of life as a journey, and it's a wonderful reminder to just be present to that journey and be on it.
Thank you, Eileen, for answering 3.5 questions about love. To learn more about Eileen's work in the world, go to eileencampbellreed.org or Google Pandemic Pastoring or 3MMM, 3-Minute Ministry Mentor. If there is one thing I've learned from the practice of pastoring in a pandemic, it's that any effort of living in wholehearted ways requires faithful actions of vulnerability and courage. I am so grateful for the research and the work of folks like Eileen Campbell Reed, as well as the work of researcher and writer Brené Brown. And since her words have accompanied us through this whole episode on healing, change, and gratitude, I share her words of commitment to living into the arena of life with vulnerability with a special mantra for this week. Brené Brown boldly states, I want to be in the arena. I want to be brave with my life. And when we make the choice to dare greatly, we sign up to get our asses kicked. We can choose courage or we can choose comfort, but we can't have both, not at the same time. I am your Holy Shenanigans Muse, Tara Lamont Eastman. Thank you for joining us this week for Holy Shenanigans that surprise, encourage, redirect, and turn life upside down, all in the name of love. This is an unpredictable spiritual adventure that is always sacred, but never stuffy. Thank you to HSP listeners for supporting our work with this podcast by way of buymeacoffee.com, Tara L. Eastman. Dear hearts, it's time to go into that ring. May we be courageous. May we be vulnerable. May we, by the mercy and holy shenanigans of God, step into the arena, wholehearted and grateful for another day of life and living. Does gratitude matter? Yes, indeed it does. Until next time, let's head into this arena together. I'm grateful that you're here. The world is grateful that you are here. When we dare greatly, we do sign up to get our asses kicked. But we aren't doing this work alone. With vulnerability, with gratitude, with compassion, we can change the status quo. We can do this wholehearted work together. Hey there, friends of Holy Shenanigans Podcast. I'm thrilled to share that I'll be recording live from the Wild Goose Festival this July 11 through 14. Wild Goose Festival is a transformational community grounded in faith-inspired social justice. It's a one-of-a-kind gathering that brings together activists, artists, and seekers from all walks of life to explore justice in art, spirituality, and community. The festival will take place at Van Hoy Farms in Union Grove, North Carolina, and I'd love for you to join me there. From engaging workshops to inspired panels and interactive experiences, Wild Goose has something for everyone. So mark your calendars and let's be part of this incredible community that is committed to making a positive impact in the world. For more information, visit www.wildgoosefestival.org. As one of my followers, use a discount code A-TLE24. That's A-TLE24. And you'll get $50 off the price of an adult weekend ticket. We will see you there at the Wild Goose Festival to connect, to build community, and to work for social justice.